Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast, presents episode 729, Renegades, recorded live on April 16th, 2020. Hello everyone, welcome to Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I am your host, Duststorm.
I am your co-host, Godzilla T.
And we are here with some very exciting news that we'll get to in a little bit. Some flight details, which is pretty exciting. We've also got the community spotlight from last week that came out on Friday to go over. We've got our Halo Renegades discussion coming up as our topic of the podcast. But before we get into all that, let's go ahead and jump on into what we normally do with the start of the show. We got our Podtacular community wrap-up, starting with Dragon Friday from last week. GT, how did things go?
Had a lot of fun. We cranked out some Halo 5 last week. Haven't been on Halo 5 in a while.
Yeah, I was surprised the vote changed that quickly.
Well, I mean... I'd heard rumblings, and you know, people get bored.
Yeah,
which is fine. It was a nice change, but we had a lot of fun.
Good.
My shot was crap, so you know how my night went. Anyway,
yeah, I joined super late. I got in for like the last 30 minutes. Or so.
I think Dust made it for the last official game.
I thought we had at least two games.
Or last two official games. I'm not sure.
Yeah. It was a little bit different of a Friday night for me. But I should be there tomorrow for most of the night. I'm looking forward to it.
Cool.
Yeah. On the Achieving Halo side of things, worked with Bobby to get 4 more achievements in Halo Wars 2, so I only have 4 left. So getting pretty close. The only ones I have left are getting taking no damage to the Terminus through Wave 15, finishing, I think it's either 75 or 77 Blitz matches, doing the 1 legendary all debuff skulls on solo legendary, and then there is Invigorating Frenzy, which is a leader ability for Colony. So there's the last 4 achievements that I need on Halo Wars 2. So probably over the next week or two, Bobby and I will get those done. Again, if anyone wants to join us on Sunday nights, we are willing to help other people get achievements. The only stipulation is, as long as I get 1 achievement on stream to say I got 1 achievement, then we'll help anyone who wants to come by and get achievements themselves. So if you'd like to do that in Halo Wars 2, feel free to come on by. Like I said last week, I still need to reach out to the Halo completionist folks to kind of set up a game day or night or type of thing where we can do achievements for a specific game. So look for that coming in hopefully the next month or so. On the articles front, unfortunately, I had one planned. I just didn't get it posted again. I'm just going to say it anyways. Ubernick is going to be our next streamer showcase whenever I decide to actually get the bloody article posted. But that's our next streamer showcase who's going to be coming up. Ubernick's been a great person to talk with. I think he's been on maybe a couple of our PAX podcasts that we've done before, maybe one. And we're looking to get him on as a guest within our next roundup of guests for the show at some point as well. So you'll hear more about him there. And then for our Machinima Monday, I don't know if you remember this one at all, GT, but the one that we had for this week was Spriggs.
Yeah, I can't say that I watched that one.
It's a very off-the-wall type of machinima. It's very M-rated because of language and inferences and all that kind of stuff, so it's not for the casual watching audience, but it has a very partially crude sense of humor. But if you're a mature adult, you'll probably appreciate some of the humor that's in there. And it's very reminiscent of the Halo community back in 2007, 2008 when the Mission Impossible was made.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. It's definitely an interesting watch. It's about, I want to say, 4 hours, maybe 5 hours through the whole series if you watch it from start to finish, which I did before I put it in our little tracking sheet of safe mission must post about. So yeah, it's an interesting watch if you have a chance to go watch it. I'll just leave it at that.
Just make sure you close the door.
Yeah, make sure the kids are asleep. Make sure they're off watching their cartoons or on their iPads or whatever. And
put your headphones on.
Exactly, exactly. For a Spartan company commendations, we are still working on that freaking Achilles helmet. Gah. On the killing an opponent that shot you first, we are at 18,762 out of 19,400. So still within that 700 mark. For assassinations, we are 4,551 out of 4,900. And then for splatters, we have 4,511 out of 4,900. So 40 behind the assassinations.
Cool.
Yep. And the last two are always the same. Killing Marines and Shoulder Bash. Those aren't going to change. Nothing from the Tales from the Foxhole this week, but I encourage everybody to feel free to reach out to us with some interesting stories that you have relating to your experience with Halo or just interesting things that come up in your day-to-day engagements or activities, whatever it may be. You can share it to us on social media or feel free to drop it in our Tales from the Foxhole channel on our Discord. And we'll read them out on the show. Into our matchmaking updates. What do we got this week, GT?
This week, for Halo 5, we've got ODST Slayer rotating in for Mythic Shotties.
Yay.
Also, remember that it's double XP in Halo 5 and MCC until the 29th.
Mm-hmm.
For the Master Chief Collection, we have Shoddy Snipes rolling into the 4v4 and 8-player FFA playlist.
Very good. Shoddy Snipes is interesting that Mythic Shoddy Snipes rolled out of Halo 5, and now it's in MCC. Nice little happenstance there.
It's Shoddy Snipes. I mean, what do you expect?
Yeah. I remember Shoddy Snipes in Halo 3 used to be a pretty big thing. I don't think it's as big anymore.
I've never been that great at using a shotgun or snipes, so I generally stay out of that playlist.
I know whenever I used to play with people who were a little bit more on the competitive edge of Halo 3, Shoddy Snipes was one of their preferred playlists to go in and play.
Yeah.
And then it was pretty big on Reach with Hemorrhage. There were plenty of places where you could jetpack to and kind of hide with the sniper.
Yeah.
So it was pretty big in Reach as well.
But after about a month, everybody knew where those spots were, so.
Yep, you knew exactly where to look. Like, okay, I'm going to look here and here right after the spawn. And sometimes you could catch people trying to get there, and you just snipe them out of the air. So, it's fun. On the MCC development update side of things, good news. The last Ring 3 blocking bug has been resolved.
Hey, they squashed it. Yeah.
Yes. The flighting for Halo 2 anniversary will be starting tomorrow, April 17th. By the time you're listening to this via download, the flight's happening. So if you've been invited, make sure you go on to Waypoint and check that you have an invite. Because they changed up some of the way that they're doing invite stuff, which Postums actually addressed this in the MCC development forum post that was posted 2 days ago. So he, in there, he actually mentions that there were still Ring 1 and 2 issues that they were working through, and there was a Ring 3 blocking bug, but as of about 2 hours ago, since we're of recording this podcast, he put out a tweet saying that the Ring 3 blocker has been squashed, and that flight emails have been generated and are going out to people, so Steam keys will be coming out, emails will be coming out, and all that fun stuff. So, cool. If you've been invited, you'll receive a standard email at the email address that's in your Halo Insider profile. On Waypoint, you will receive a notification. So, for those of you who haven't been to Waypoint in a while, or never, except for
what is this waypoint you speak of?
Right. The same place that you would have gone to register to be a Halo Insider. You can actually go there, and if you are invited for the flight, you will see the Steam key there. There will also be a notification in the little notification area, which is a little bell icon in the top bar right by your profile name. And that will also link to a message that you receive with instructions on how to actually participate in the flight. So how to redeem the key, how to download, all the other information about reporting issues, how to use the Halo support site, yada, yada, yada. So all that stuff will be coming out within the next 24 hours, basically. And judging on how big the flight was last time, most people are probably going to get invited.
I imagine there'll be a sizable chunk of people.
Yeah. So, shout out to all our stream folks in the Mixer chat and Twitch chat. We've got Fuchs, Laird, Pins, and hey, Eric Boo. On the Halo Waypoint side of things, we have the Community Spotlight that came out on Friday last week. So we've got quite a few things to cover. We have our picks. Actually picked 7 things because it was hard to actually keep it to 5, which works because you only chose 3. So it worked out really well for us.
I'm looking through your picks, and they would have been my picks too, so...
So overall, we just kind of mostly it's the same stuff as normal. So first is going to be our honorable mention because the title image that was used was made by Mr. Halo Art and Mrs. Halo Art. They make some pretty good, simplistic, untouched Forge artwork. And if you actually go to his Twitter, he shows a behind-the-scenes look on how the Forge pieces actually look from different angles. And it's interesting to see like how far away certain elements are. Like the orange background is so far away compared to some of the eggs, which are actually like Timmy the Whale forage items and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But all of his stuff is simply Forge. No photoshopping, no touch-ups. It's simply in-game screenshots. So I wonder if how they do this is... They have 2 Xboxes, and one of them is on a platform, like looking at the other as they're forging and kind of doing a live forge like that.
Well, could be.
So, honorable mentions to that. First pick is, I think, going to be. Is it mine or yours? Is the first one?
It's going to be popping. First one is.
Probably mine. Yeah. This first one is Cargo En Route. By Last Name Silver. This is a render. Has a lot of different Halo aspects to it. It's got a warthog a warthog truck with an extended bed on it. It's on a Halo ring. It's got some Forerunner pieces in there.
It's a deuce and a half warthog.
It's a what?
A deuce and a half.
A deuce and a half?
It's actually, there's a military truck. It's called a deuce and a half, and it was a cargo truck.
Oh, okay.
It was a 3-axle, 6-wheel drive truck.
Oh, okay. There we go. GT with a knowledge drop there.
Some of them were actually also called half tracks. The back 2 axles were replaced by tank treads.
Oh, like, so both wheels were tank treads?
Well, no, they actually had a set of tank treads instead of 2 axles.
Right, okay. Very interesting. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
The next one, I believe, is yours. This is the pencil drawing of George. This is by Clockwork Dynamics on Reddit.
Sorry, I just got a soft spot for George.
Yeah. I can appreciate that. Next one we have... Was this one actually above? No, it wasn't. Okay. I think your Hunter one is the next one. Yep. Hunters versus Spartan. This is by @NinjaDoggo.
Mm-hmm.
This looks like either, I guess it's a pencil drawing. Looks like a pencil drawing.
Yeah.
Very neat. I like the way that the pencil coloring in there gives just an interesting dynamic to the hunter armor and the worms.
Yeah.
Looks really neat.
That's kind of why I picked it.
Yeah. And then I think, this next one is mine. This is Master Chief Draws. by Aftimus 66, and it's a little Master Chief Mega Bloks figure holding a pencil, drawing a Master Chief. Yeah. It's really cool. Mm-hmm. In the background, there's also a Halo ring, there's Arbiter with a sword, there's a Hunter, and it looks like there was maybe a doodle of either a Grunt or a Prophet or a Hunter arm kind of on the top right part that got erased. Yeah, very cool. Next piece we have here is Grave Mind by Sax John.
That is the cutest you will ever see a Gravemind.
Yeah, you're probably right. Unless it gets into a plush form.
I don't think a plush form would even do that justice. But anyway. I thought it was neat. A neat twist on the Gravemind.
It looks like it's either watercolor or done in Microsoft Paint.
It looks good. I like it.
Yeah. Just kind of judging by the strokes,
mm-hmm.
how they look, I'm thinking it's either watercolor or Microsoft Paint. Then the next one comes out of mine. It is Halo Combat Evolved by artwork by Joel on Instagram. And it's the Halo CE box art.
You know, I don't know why, but just because of the choice, I think just the choice of colors. When I see that picture, for some reason, I think Pinball Machine.
I can see it. Yeah. That'd be interesting.
It just looks like it would be the artwork behind the scoreboard on a pinball machine.
Actually, I'm curious now. Has someone actually made a pinball machine? Because, you know, there's like custom builds of pinball machines in different.
Oh, yeah.
Of different kinds. So I would. Yeah. Doesn't look like there is one or not from
or at least nobody's posted. Yeah.
All right. Community. I have a project for you.
Find yourself an old pinball machine and reskin it in Halo.
Yes. Do a little Halo sound effects, have a ball splatter or a grunt sign or something like that. Have the bumpers be energy swords. There's a lot you could do there. Actually, that kind of surprises me that there hasn't been
or even grab hammers.
Ooh. Yeah. That's not a bad idea. All right, someone in the community needs to make this happen. This needs to be done. But yeah, that piece was really cool. And again, I can't quite tell what... I have a hard time telling what the particular art style is, whether it's watercolor, pastels, pencil, or whatnot. I just know it looks pretty.
Pretty. That's what it is.
Exactly.
Who cares what it is? We like the way it looks.
Exactly. And then the rest of the picks are mine, actually. This next one is a diorama. So this is done by a group called, or now called, The Domain. People may have seen this person get their head shaved into a Halo symbol recently, but the same guy is a big Halo Mega Constructs collector, and he actually kind of does a custom build, trying to be accurate as it can be, from the bridge scene in Halo 3 ODST. So he rebuilds the tower with the computer to trigger the explosives on the bridge, and he has a whole bunch of Marine, ODST, and Covenant pieces, and he goes over the whole build process, how he has boxes of weapons and units and figures and all that kind of stuff. So it's an interesting watch. Next one here is Gunshot, which is a montage edited by Xander. And I have to say, I haven't been this impressed with the montage since the Straight Ripping montage from like 2009.
Yeah.
It's a really, really well done montage. And it's on that caliber as far as like music, some of the VFX, some of the slight additions to kind of the in-game shots that they pull from theater.
Mm-hmm.
And overall, it's really well executed.
Yeah, I did watch it, and it's an okay watch. For me, they went a little overboard with the effects.
Just me. It was a little much, but
to the point where there was points in it where it was hard to follow what they were actually trying to show you.
Yes.
I don't mind the effects, but don't cover up and don't distract from what you're trying to show. that and it wasn't that bad. There's definitely been worse ones out there, but yeah.
Just given some of the more recent montages between like Halo Reach and now, I personally haven't seen anything that I think has been this caliber in a while. Oh no,
it's definitely right up there.
And I'm not saying there haven't been any other ones. It's just from ones that I've seen get thrown around social media, and I know there's a whole bunch of montages being made weekly, monthly, whatever. But this one, just since it was in the update, well, I'll say this. Other montages that have been in the update haven't impressed me like this one has.
Yeah.
There, I'll just leave it at that.
Top notch.
Yeah. Next one is, I think, a couple of ones from Twitter. Yeah. This next one comes from that rookie, OVTHR. It is a render taken from, I guess, kind of Reach or Reach inspired. It's Halo Reach inspired, and it's basically a Marine holding an AR with a silencer on it. It's got all the camo and some of the like Halo backpack and armor that you would see from Halo Reach. And then the last one is, actually, this was before this tweet. I put these out of order. That was stupid. This is from @warjaw, and this is just kind of some simple doodles. There's a hunter, an elite, and a grunt in this set. Very simplistic, but very cute.
You know, I just noticed something.
What?
You know, I've been kind of following along with the on the update, and for some reason, it's not showing me the tweet.
Huh.
It goes straight from the videos to the end of the article.
That's weird.
Yeah.
Refresh. Refresh.
I just opened the page.
I don't know.
That is weird.
That is anyway, very strange. So those are our picks.
Fine, I'll follow along on the stream.
So those are our picks. Again, we recommend you guys go, and gals, go to the article if you want to see everything that was curated by Snickerdoodle. She does a great job trying to pull in everything she can week to week, which is a daunting task in and of itself. So thank you, Snickerdoodle, for putting everything together. We just showcased the top picks for us. If you want to see everything, again, head on over to Halo Waypoint and check out the community spotlight over there.
Which we highly recommend you do.
Yes. When you miss the flippers, you hear wort, wort, wort. That would be good. Or one of the Master Chief death sounds. Ah! I could have done it better. Anyways, Social Stream has made a return. So last week we had mentioned that they put a tweet out, and Unishek is actually the one streaming it from his channel, and the Halo channel is hosting Unishek. So in case you don't get the notification from the Mixer Halo account saying that they're live, it's because they're not. They're just hosting Unishek. But they have been doing, they did Halo MCC last week. They did Halo 5 this week. So I don't know if they're going to like trade on and off or what they're going to be doing. I'm guessing with the flighting coming out, they might go back to MCC next week. So we'll see how that happens. But It's the same time on Wednesdays as it was in the past. 1:30 p.m. Pacific time is about the time they start. And all you have to do is match with them in matchmaking, and you'll secure yourself the Ice Unicorn skin in Halo 5 and the nameplate in MCC. From the social posts side of things, we've got some more polls out there. So I think the Halo accounts have taken up what the community has done as far as, hey, pick your best out of these selections. So they had one for this week. This was actually tweeted out by the HCS account, and they said, what would be your go-to Halo loadout? Choose one primary and one power weapon. So the options on the primary weapons are the Halo CE Magnum, the Halo 2 BR, the Halo 3 BR, the Halo Reach DMR, the Halo 2 Anniversary BR, or the Halo 5 Magnum. And then the power weapons are the Halo CE Rockets, the Halo 2 Sniper, the Halo 2 Energy Sword, the Halo 3 Sniper, the Halo Reach Grenade Launcher, the Halo Reach Rockets, the Halo 2 Anniversary Sniper, and the Halo 5 Railgun.
To me, there's only two choices.
What's that?
1C. CE Magnum and a Halo 2 energy sword. That's all you need?
I said the Halo 2 Anniversary Battle Rifle and the Halo Reach rockets.
Yeah. Sorry, I just...
I mean, I can appreciate the Halo CE Magnum. Because that thing is just ungodly unbalanced.
It is. If they would have taken that out, I would have probably picked the Halo 2 BR.
Yeah. So that's kind of fills our poll gap for the week, since we didn't do one this week, because we're talking about Renegades as our topic. But yep, that's over on the HCS account. There's been a couple of more field recordings put out by 343. On Instagram, they did one. They did some more propane cannon fire recordings. Basically, they fill up a propane tank and ignite it, and big boom sound effect from air compression. And then they had a YouTube video that they posted, which was also posted on Twitter and Facebook. And it's a compilation of them recording vehicle sounds, including helicopters.
Mm-hmm.
Which a lot of people...
And jets,
which have really speculated on if we'll see the return of the Falcon, or if there will be another UNSC flying vehicle with rotating blades of some kind.
Or it could be entirely possible they're recording it for cutscenes.
Yeah, that's true as well.
So,
I mean, obviously we don't know what specifically they're using it for.
Exactly.
But,
theory away, go right ahead.
I mean, the explosions, we kind of know what those are for. There's lots of explosions in the game.
When you're talking weapons fire or explosions, yeah, probably a good idea what those are for. But vehicles, they could be either way.
And there was the pug for grunt sounds, or could be environment sounds. Who knows?
Could be.
So we have a few more field recordings on Instagram there. There's a new employee spotlight out on the 343industries.com website. And this one is for Paige Johnson. She is a producer on the UX and UI team for Halo Infinite. Another reminder that the Relief and Recovery Rec Pack is still available. You can purchase it for $9.99 over on the Microsoft Store, and it is available until April 30th, and all proceeds from that goes to Global Giving for coronavirus relief. You can head on over to aka.ms/reliefpack to buy yours today. We have a couple of Today in Halo and fan fiction. You want to read over those, GT? We actually have two this week, not just one that we normally have.
Yeah. For Today in Halo, 15 April 2554, following the death of the rookie during the confrontation with the United Rebel Front, the remainder of Alpha 9 agreed to transition from the ODSTs and join the Spartan 4 program.
Yep. So Buck and Romeo, Mickey and Dutch.
No.
Dutch didn't join. Oh, yeah, that's right. Dutch didn't join.
Not at that time.
Right.
Well, not in that book.
Right. And then Mickey decided to go
rogue.
Yes.
Rogue Mickey! Oh. For the Fiction Friday, Fathom Station was an extensive network of underground facilities nestled along the
Aleutian
Rim in the Beta Gabriel Cortex Ocean. It was designed to research and explore a submerged Covenant carrier splendid intention.
Are there map descriptions in Halo 5?
Yeah, I think there are.
I don't think I've ever read a single one of them.
I probably haven't either.
That's probably some homework. We could probably just make an episode out of reading map lore, kind of how Hidden Experience has done a couple of his videos recently. There's little lore bits hidden around in all the Halo games.
Oh, yeah, there is.
That you have to go out of your way to find, or you have to be intentional on actually going to read it.
Well, in the 343 games, there is. There is a little bit in the Bungie games, but 343's really hit it. hid and has placed, I'll put placed, a lot of lore in different spots in the game.
Yeah. Just gotta go out there and find it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the We Got the Spartans shirt by MetaThreads is still being sold as well. So you can head on over to metathreads.com and find the shirt. Again, proceeds for that also goes to Global Giving. On the community highlights side of things, for playgriffball.com, there are week 2 power rankings for both the PC and Xbox seasons. So you can go on over there and check those out. For Halo Customs, which is a community we haven't talked about in a long time, they actually have a monthly recap article over on kind of the blog side of their forums. And they kind of go over the fact that Halo 2 flighting is imminent. They mentioned the Jens Hausch GoFundMe, which is for one of the 343 employees that actually passed away last week, who was one of the environment art tech leads. Then there's also a Halo Customs Community Spotlight, which is showing off a generator defense game type on Halo Reach. And then there's a couple of other community showcases, one of them being a Halo Reach mod, and another one being a Forge piece in Halo Reach. On the community content side of things, we've got quite a few podcast updates. HCS Pro Talk has released their 122nd episode titled Infinite Possibilities. For Podcast Evolve, they have Mission Debrief episode 93, which is the mission Beachhead in Halo Wars. And then episode 207 of their main title podcast, which is just news and show announcements. On the Finish the Fight side of things, episode 29 has been released discussing Combat Evolved Anniversary. Pretty apt timing since that just came out on PC.
Mm-hmm.
On the Sacred,
I wonder what inspired that.
I don't know. Wait. On the Sacred Icon Halo side of things, we have episode number 28. You know the music? Time to dance.
I love that line.
Me too.
I remember when they released that trailer and they had that at the end and they had that in it and I was like, oh god, that's just the perfect line.
Yeah. I do think some of the Bungie narrative as far as mm-hmm. lines is a little bit better than 343's.
Yeah. Well, they were a little bit more I don't know. They had a more of a sarcastic feel to a lot of the lines.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's like on that very same trailer, at the very end of it, desperate times call for desperate measures. That line that Buck says, mm-hmm. you know, it's, they looked at the character a little different than 343 does. There was a little bit more plainly smartass in their comments. There was.
Yeah.
Which was fun. I mean, yeah, don't get me wrong. I like the way 343's handled a lot of the characters. But I enjoyed the way Bungie did as well. It fit the characters.
Yeah. I'm not saying that 343 does a bad job. It's just
no.
There's something about the Bungie era Halos, just some of the lines that are in the game that just stick out more.
Well, we were also a different... People in general were different back then, too.
Yeah,
What you could get away with was different.
This is true. You are correct there. Halo Outreach Podcast has released their 35th episode. This is regarding the Halo 2 anniversary PC flight and Double XP ending soon. Forward Into Dawn has released another podcast, so they've broken their once-a-year streak and have actually released these two episodes this year. Episode 35 is titled Halo in the Time of Corona.
So model? Or sun? Or?
Yeah, who knows what that's referring to.
Do I need sunglasses or a lime? Or both?
Or a mask. The other Corona. HCS Weekly has released their 67th episode, and this one features Zios. And that's all we got for podcasts this week. On the YouTube front, Hidden Xperia has a video titled Halo Infinite, Will It Be Delayed? Featuring the Act Man. So, obviously, diving into some of the recent stuff that's been around, like Phil Spencer talking to IGN and a couple of the other news things and assumptions and supposed leaks, quote unquote, that have been coming out recently, what that all means. So it's an interesting video. Obviously, take stuff in there with a grain of salt.
Keep in mind, this is just their opinion.
Right.
None of it's based. There's no facts either way yet.
Yeah. Halo Canon has his monthly recap for the month of March. A little late, but it's out there now. Installation 00 has 5 new videos up. First one is, why aren't UNSC robots a thing? A lore and theory video. That's actually a very interesting video. It goes into like some of the kind of assumptions that maybe humanity would take in the future regarding robots and AI. It's an interesting one. A most detailed breakdown for the Pillar of Autumn, the 7th installment of Project John 117, fixing the Warthog run. So this is actually kind of a video and a challenge. This actually kind of continues along the detailed breakdown of his Pillar of Autumn video and kind of goes over his interpretation of how the Warthog run could be fixed and has challenged Forgers to actually recreate it, if possible. And then, how many Spartans are left? Another lore and theory video. On the Halo Completionist side, there's a new video up, and it's just the Halo Completionist doing some casual Halo 2 Lazo live streaming stuff. Icebiteful has Frogger in Halo Reach. It's a custom game, very akin to the Halo custom game and Duck Hunt. It's a Reach custom where people are driving in hogs and mongooses around a track that's mostly airborne, and then there's a person in the middle that's in a tank. And if all of the people get to the end, there's supposed to be power weapons that you kill the tank. So it's basically a Duck Hunt slash Halo type game mode. Ultimate Halo has 3 new videos. First one, why Aatrox and the Banished are likely to return in Halo Infinite. Top 7 Halo fan games from his personal pick. And then, does this confirm the Banished in Halo Infinite? And that is referring to a post from Halo, or from Mega Constructs, of a new Hunter figure that's going to be coming out later this year. And it's very, the model itself is similar to the Halo 5 Hunter design, but it has kind of the Banished red on it. So this has led a lot of people to assume that this semi confirms that the Banished is in there. Also enforced by the fact that on the blog post, the person that posted that said that they're excited to see the Hunter kind of fight against Chief and the pilot. So Banished in Halo Infinite pseudo confirmed. At that point, that's pretty damning evidence if it is. So there's that that's out there. Eric, yes, I agree. If Banished was an Infinite, I think it would be a worthy opponent. The way that they were told in Halo Wars 2 was very well done.
Yes.
Fortunately, both Halo Wars stories have been amazing. So the Banished was very well fleshed out. Their backstory was incredible. The way that they portrayed the enemy in Halo Wars was really, really good. So I would love to see the Banished in Infinite be an enemy. Green Skull has a video. Does Master Chief think pineapple belongs on pizza? And this was a cameo that he got from Steve Downes. And Steve Downes actually answered this: Steve Downes, not Master Chief. It was basically like, well, if saying that pineapple is okay, I mean, kind of keeping my job, not his job, but like keeping the peace, then yes, pineapple is okay to have on pizza. And then Twitter, of course, ran with that and
did
the Twitter thing. Eric Caboo says yes in all caps. Penn says no in all caps. We've got a split in our own community on whether pineapple belongs on pizza.
It kind of depends on what else is on the pizza.
Sure. General Heed has 5 new videos. First one is on Halo 3, Arbiter is killed by the Prophet of Truth. So he just does a model swap for Truth and Arbiter on the mission, the Covenant, for kind of the last few cutscenes. And then in Halo 2, can Jackals fly Banshees? And the answer is yes, but they can't get out of Banshees. Go figure. Okay. Mixer chat's getting interesting right now with the whole pizza debate.
Yep.
All you have to do is bring up Sprint and Halo, pineapple on pizza, and who knows what else, just to get people stirred up. Oh, geez.
Doesn't take much in some cases.
Nope. Halo 2, what does Flood Regret truly look like? So apparently, the regret biped that's part of the Gravemind in the cutscene is an actual biped. And he was able to spawn it in-game, and he can't move or do anything. It just basically sits there. But eyes blink, and yeah, it's an interesting one. Halo 3 ODST, are elites actually friendly to you? So since all the elites are pretty much dead in Halo 3 ODST, he goes in and makes it to where they spawn alive instead of dead. Turns out that the elites are actually not friendlies, but they don't have any AI associated with them, so they don't attack or defend or anything. But the Marines will also shoot the elites, and then the Brutes and Jackals and all the Covenant will actually shoot the elites as well. And then Halo 3, can civilians drive Covenant vehicles? And the answer is pretty much yes across the board, minus the Prowler. Kevin Cool X has 3 new videos, mostly about kind of Halo flighting type stuff. First one is Halo 3 Anniversary PC Flight and Halo CE PC Bullet Spread Fixed. Next one is Searching for a Halo Reach PC Hardcore. So it's just a Halo Twitch stream highlights. And then the next one is actually one that I watched and recommend watching. Center versus Lowered Crosshairs, which is better. So he goes through and does an analysis of what the pros and cons are of having a center crosshair on PC versus a lower crosshair. And he kind of came to the conclusion that having a lowered crosshair gives you more top view above the reticle for you to see more, and it's more advantageous. Mm-hmm. So it's an interesting comparison. I recommend go checking it out. Pac-Man Gaming also has an update regarding Halo 2 Anniversary Flighting and how the invitation system is going to work, what we discussed earlier. Halo Codex has a video, Easter Bunny versus Master Chief. Just a short little skit where Master Chief beats the crap out of the Easter Bunny. Eckhart's Ladder has a new Halo video. He says, why I'm worried about Halo Infinite. Started watching this video. I haven't finished it yet. And then Team Respawn has 4 videos. First one is a Halo Wars 2 Mythbusters. Which faction has the better infantry? And then there's 3 Halo Wars 2 multiplayer videos. Yap Yap's Revenge, Chilling with Serena, and Burned by Kinsano. On over to our community musings, we've got a couple of Halopedia stuff returning. So why don't we kick it off with Trivia Tuesday, GT?
For Trivia Tuesday, did you know that the multiplayer level named Anchor Point was cut from Halo 2? The level was to be a 2v2 map focusing on aerial banshee dogfights. Personally, I did know that one.
Same.
For the Lore Thursday, even when outnumbered 3-1, the Shadow of Intent was still an even match for most Brute ships. Considering it was a CCS carrier, yeah.
Shipmaster, they outnumber us 3-1. And it is an even fight. That's a good line, too.
Yeah, it is.
For those missing the Know Your Halo from Podcast Evolved, they're taking a little break. They've got to reload the question bank. So they haven't had some for a while, but they will be back with more in the future. Halo Hump Day has made a return. In April 2553, Oni Intelligence Unit Kilo 5 fought Kig-Yar pirates for control over the former Covenant battlecruiser Pious Inquisitor, resulting in the destruction of the ship and apparent death of Stefan Sensky.
And then which is the father of a certain Spartan.
Yep.
You guys figure it out.
Because we actually talked about the book last year.
Mm-hmm.
Kilo 5. Penn spoiled it. Steve Downs has an update on his cameos. he's already raised $20,000 for Project Cure in his goal to get $30,000. So that's Ooh. Still available. Cameo.com/sdownes. And that's S-D-O-W-N-E-S. GDC has started doing their virtual briefs. And today, Josh Minkey's brief came out, which is machine learning for optimal matchmaking. And boy, did the comments come flooding in with, oh, this is why matchmaking is broken. There's the whole dichotomy there of everyone either hates the true skill system or loves the true skill system.
I tell you what, in Halo 5, I'm happy with the system they've got. I get more balanced matches than I have at any time. I mean, even when population drops down low.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes matchmaking does take a little longer, but I seem to get more balanced games. Unlike other games that I play that don't have that, and the leader has 20 kills, the second place has 5 kills.
I have no idea what game you're talking about. Oh, wait.
Well, it can be applied to just about any game in MCC on some nights.
Yeah. Well, but they're using an updated matchmaking system for that.
Yeah.
Thankfully, it's not the built-in matchmaking that was in the games originally.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's not as bad as, like, back in Halo 3 days.
Yeah.
Halo 2 and Halo 3 days.
Right. Yeah. Josh Minkey goes into a whole bunch of technical jargon on different formulas and curves and statistics and all that stuff that, if you're interested, it's definitely an interesting watch. I've watched most of it. There's about another 15 minutes I haven't finished watching, but it's a good watch. Real Life Spartan is now a father, so congratulations.
Congrats.
Yep. His baby girl was born on, I believe it was April 12th. I think it was Sunday at 12:51 in the morning. Her name is Heidi. So congratulations to the new parents. And then Vic DeLeon has a tweet out for some old screenshots that he actually found from Halo 2.5 to Halo 3 era, so probably during Halo 3 development. That would be kind of akin to a Forerunner living space.
Mm-hmm.
It was called a Forerunner condo, and it was going to be used, or the idea was it would be a complex that housed Forerunner scientists living on a Halo ring. So interesting little look into Halo development.
Yeah, I always like those kind of behind the scenes look with some of the concept art that never got published and things like that. It's kind of neat looking into what was going through their minds.
Interesting, like kind of looking at some of these screenshots. Some of this is a little like what I was envisioning when we were reading through Renegades, and they talk about going to the abandoned Forerunner world.
Yeah. Which we'll get into here shortly.
Yes. Yes, we will. So that's pretty much the wrap up on all the updates. So next up will be our topic of the week, which is Halo Renegades.
Mm-hmm.
All right, GT, where should we start off the book?
About at the end of the last book.
That works.
Or the beginning of this book.
Well, I kind of dipped in a little bit into this book from the when we were talking about Smoke and Shadow, when Kip...
Just a little bit.
When Kip kind of left the ship after we found out that he's been tattling, and a little bit found that he was leaking info to Oni.
Yes, a little bit did find out that he was being a bad person, or a not-so-good person, or whatever you want to call it.
He was being a spook. Yeah.
But we basically pick up in Renegades, we pick up where the Ace of Spades is basically in dry dock, getting repaired, because somebody got a little overzealous with the slipspace engine. A little bit.
A little bit, got a little bit overzealous.
Yeah. His calculations weren't exactly correct, and he burnt out the Ace of Spades engines. That's always good.
Well, I think like his calculations were good, but the engine just couldn't take it. Right?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Well, he overestimated the engine is the way that worked.
Basically, let's just run it on max to get back as fast as possible. Like, okay, sure. Now I can't fly anywhere. Great. But that doesn't matter really much because of what's soon going to happen, but we'll get to that in a little bit. He overclocked it a little bit too far. Yeah, he did. He certainly did.
Yeah, he took it one jumper too far.
There's got to be some kind of Star Wars reference in there, like Millennium Falcon and Hyperdrive or something. I don't know.
Well, I can see how it fits, as often as the Millennium Falcon's hyperdrive seems to break.
Right, exactly. That's exactly what I was going for.
Always seems the first thing that goes is their hyperdrive.
Yep. It's the fastest ship in the universe, and it's the one that has the most problems going as fast as it can go. Maybe it shouldn't be going that fast. Anyways.
Well, they start off, like I said, they start off with the Ace of Spades on dry dock. They're on a more of an outlaw type world where you don't walk around unarmed.
Yeah.
And while they're there, they work on a plan to basically embarrass Geklar, to take away his honor and hopefully kill him.
Yeah.
It's the whole point. So they set this up where...
Very elaborate plan.
Yeah, very, well, not super elaborate, but pretty elaborate plan.
I mean, given everything that was going through, like, Rion's head of like, okay, this needs to happen at this time, which will trigger this, and yada, yada, yada. It's a pretty impressive plan.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. With Little Bit's help, they had developed some of unique technology.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd gotten word that a Yonhat by the name of, what was his name?
I wrote it down. You're talking about Eld?
Yeah.
Yeah, Eld.
Was, he holds auctions for high value items. He doesn't have a problem selling WMD.
Unlike Norfell, who doesn't.
Unlike Norfell, which
nothing to do with
she
that.
Does
doesn't want anything to do with those things.
Yeah. So they find out that Geklar is coming to bid on this piece of equipment, which turns out to be a harvester.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is possibly the harvester that we see in Spartan Ops.
Well, it is a harvester. We will put it that way.
Right.
I'm sure that the Covenant had more than one harvester. But they come, you know, they come up with this elaborate plan to use this technology that they created with the help of Little Bit to actually try to basically steal Gek's thunder, find out what he's after, and find some way to dishonor him. And then they also, while Gek is in the auction house, because the way the auctions at this particular facilities are held is once you enter the facility, all your tech goes dead. No communications of any type.
Yep.
You surrender all your weapons. You don't want to piss off the house because they have some pretty heavy artillery in the auction room, which is a repurposed vault.
Yeah, you don't mess around there.
You want to pay attention to the rules.
Yeah.
Because if you break the rules, it'll be the last ones you break.
If you make it out alive.
Yeah, if.
If. Big if. Yeah, I forget. How did they pick up on the fact that Gek was there before? Was it the intercept something?
Norfell
told
him.
That's right.
Norfell fed her the information. Of course, that means that she owes Nor another favor.
Yeah, three favors at this point.
Yeah.
So we've been dancing around what's actually going to happen in the vault here. Why don't we get to that point?
Well, actually, there's a little bit
that you want to touch on first.
We need to cover first, like how they get
some of the other aspects of the plan.
Never mind. What I was thinking of happens a little later. But, you know, they have Ramshalva, which is the guy they rescued from Geklar.
Mm-hmm.
He's healed up, and he decides to join the crew. And, of course, he joins the crew to get revenge against Gek for what he did to for what Gek did to Ram's crew.
Yeah, this is a two-part plan.
Yeah.
Rion's running...
Two goals.
Right.
Both of them hope that it ends in Gek's death. So, So the plan is to try to read latent images on Geklar's, basically his data pad.
Yeah.
His smartwatch.
Yeah. That's a good way to put it. The smartwatch of the future. Basically just like a phone screen on your arm.
Yeah. So they've weaved this technology into just a standard glove, and supposedly you place the glove over the screen and it'll read latent images. So that does mean you have to get close.
Mm-hmm. And
so
provoke a very mean elite.
So Rion shows up to the auction. Of course, she's the last one there. And two reasons she wanted to be the last one there. One, she wanted to delay the credit check as long as possible, because she knew as soon as the auction house checked her bank accounts, that Oni would pick up on it and locate it.
Mm-hmm.
Two, she wanted to make sure Geklar was in the facility first.
Yep.
You know, make sure he was already disarmed. And she gets in there and she
just looks at him.
She basically taunts him. And he bites. He comes over, and as he is choking the life out of her, he takes this special glove and, of course, puts it over his little wrist pad.
Basically, trying to hold on to where she doesn't get choked.
Yeah. Which she's really getting choked.
Right.
She's about to pass out when he lets go.
But not by choice.
pass out for the last time.
Yeah.
But the house basically states, you can kill her, but you're going to die too. So is it worth it?
Right.
So they go through the auction. Of course, Geklar wins the auction. Once the auction's over, Rion beats Feet out. And as she's getting away from the auction house, the other members of the crew have retrieved the luminary from Gek's ship. I'm still trying to figure out how two people got past
six
elites.
Yeah, I think it was like six or something like that.
I'm still trying to figure that one out.
I was scratching my head on that one too. They didn't really provide a lot of detail.
They don't really... Yeah, they don't really define how that happened.
They're just like, yeah, we got it. And like, okay, meet back at the ship. How did you pull that off? Although they pulled off some pretty crazy stuff in Smoke and Shadows, so it's not outside the realm of impossibility, but it's a head scratcher.
Yeah, they don't really get real descriptive on that.
No. But
as they are getting ready to leave, they're all going back to the ship to get off planet before Gek gets out of the auction house, so he doesn't just, level them before they take off.
But they didn't.
Who shows up?
Yeah.
Oni.
Yeah, there's a certain Spartan that kind of ambushed them and put bags over their heads, hogtied them, and dragged them off to a UNSC ship.
Mm-hmm. And this is where
Kip comes back into play.
Well,
not yet, but he comes back in the play.
Not yet, but this is where Agent Han shows up, and they basically confiscate everything.
Pin says the not cool members of Apollo.
Yeah, the not cool members of Apollo. Although, Spartan Novak, he's pretty cool.
Yes.
He was doing his job, which, I get. I mean, he was doing his job. But he felt for real.
He had a little humanity in him, at least.
Yeah.
Throughout the book.
And I'll say this, at the very end of the book, he's really hopes he never comes across her again. because he doesn't want to have to arrest her.
For multiple I'll reasons.
Say that much. Yes.
Yeah. But yeah, she gets or interviewed by
interrogated
by another guy called Han.
Agent Han.
Agent Han.
He's the lead. Oh, what did they call him?
I'm trying to think of it.
He's in charge of making sure the scrappers are only taking the scrap and not the Forerunner stuff.
But he had another mission too that he was assigned by.
No, he's just
monitoring scrappers.
He's just there to keep an eye on the scrap.
Okay.
The other mission is handled by a different person.
Okay. Okay.
He's just catching a ride on their ship.
Yep. And he's trying to get Rion to share information of what she knows about a little bit because they've
confiscated. Well, what they're looking for. Yeah. What they're looking for is the debris field that they found where. They found at the end of the previous book.
Right.
So Oni's looking for coordinates for that. Of course, they're wanting to get Little Bit's cooperation.
Which he's not.
Which he's not being cooperative. They basically ransack the ship and remove any information there. Of course, Ram Shalva was on the ship. And before they took the ship, he wiped all the navigation records.
Yep, pretty much took everything digital and physical. Like all the stuff that mm-hmm. Rion had collected about leads to her father, they took everything from Kip and Lisa's personal effects, they took. Yeah, they basically ran, checked the ship, and placed a whole bunch of bugs in it instead.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this is. They literally took their entire warehouse. And I do mean. The entire warehouse, down to the foundation.
Yeah, they basically airlifted it away.
Note to self, do not put your valuable stuff in a shipping container.
Spread it out at least a little bit. Make backup copies. 3-2-1, rule of backups. 3 copies, 2 different mediums, 1 different location.
Yeah, they did that and they took the backups. And then they took the backups of the backups.
Yeah, everything was in that warehouse. Yeah.
But so far, I mean, you know, to this point in the book, it's actually pretty riveting. I mean, it's really kind of, you know, fast-paced. It really gets you into the story pretty quickly.
It doesn't, like, for this whole discussion between Agent Han and Rion, like, didn't really seem quite full effect Oni. Like, it seemed like Agent Han didn't want to just all up like take them in to like Trevelyan or Midnight facility and lock them away. It's like they were trying to strike a deal to actually get this information, and in exchange for that they'd actually let them go.
The criteria he works under is that he needs to secure these Forerunner relics. And his goal is to actually try to get the salvagers to work for them.
Right.
Whether they know it or not.
Right.
And he probably would have been okay with Rion if he hadn't gone as far as he did.
And isn't that one of the things that Spartan Dylan kind of hinted
at? Spartan Novak actually called him on that.
Right.
After this little interrogation was over and they got the information they wanted.
He's like, do you really have to go?
Novak's like, you know, Novak's like, you created an enemy today.
Mm-hmm.
And Han is like, you mean we? And he's like, no, this one's all you. You know, and he chalks it up to, you know, well, we can't, you know, handle these salvagers with kit gloves. You know, his view of salvagers is they're scraping the bottom of the barrel. They're just right above the.
Yeah.
And not by that much. And what happens is, guess who's still wearing a special glove? She happens to glean some information from Han and the Spartan. And I have to say that She got a good lick into the jaw on Han. Well deserved.
Yep. Before Novak had to intervene.
Well, Novak was intervening. She just got around a Spartan. So I'm kind of wondering if Novak just said, I think I'll let him just get this one.
Like, you deserve.
And that's where I started to like Novak. Because honestly, you have this 120-pound civilian woman getting around a Spartan and decking an Oni officer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure somebody let that happen.
Don't want to say who, huh? Yeah, that's a good point.
But during the interrogation, they bring in Kip, and, you know, he...
trying to talk sense.
This is where you get... He comes in to try to help talk sense into her and all this other crap, and...
But she would be the...
This is where you hear...
He'd be the last person that she wants to talk to.
Exactly, and that's the way it plays out, too.
Yeah.
But that's where you hear Kip's backstory. Or, well, that's where Rion hears Kip's backstory. Where you find out how Kip is originally from Cedra, and he was on Cedra when basically the Nightfall story took place, where the biological weapon was released and his wife and daughter were killed.
Another one of those threads tying into this timeline.
Mm-hmm.
I hope this book gets a sequel, because there are so many different threads pulling into this. It was an awesome read.
Honestly, they did a pretty good job of closing out a lot of stuff
mm-hmm.
in this book. To where, don't get me wrong, there's stuff there that they could do a sequel on, but it brings a lot of closure to a lot of different threads that they'd had loose.
Yeah.
Or to a point where you could accept it as a closure.
I wonder
Halo 3 ending, not Halo 2 ending.
Right. I wonder if this is just really far-fetched, but if there could be any kind of tie-in with this book, with Renegades and Shadow of Reach. Like, even just if it's like a small mention or some tie-in or something.
Don't know.
I mean, obviously that's a very big long shot, and there's no basis for me to say that, but...
It kind of all depends on what time frame the new book comes in at. Because this, this is right after the Covenant War. I mean, we're talking late 2552, 2553 is where these two books take place. So it's right there at the end. No, it's not.
Because when was, like, them interrogating Spark, that would have had to be a year or two after...
Nope, it wasn't. Actually, the Rubicon showed up shortly after Halo 3.
Okay.
Literally just months after Halo 3.
Okay, so, yeah, this would have been a year or two after. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so we're... Like, the first book starts probably right at the end of the war, and then the second book takes place... You know, this is, like, Halo... pre-Halo 4 timeframe.
Eric was saying is the first book was... January 2557, which would be 4 years.
No, they actually referenced 2552 in the book as the active date, unless it was a mistake.
Well, 2552, no, that would have been before the events of Halo.
Yeah, it was late 2552.
Because Halo 1 was September, October 2552.
I don't remember. But yeah, they were talking right at the end of the Covenant War.
I'm curious now. Okay. Well, either way.
This is short. We can put it this way. It's shortly after the war ended.
So Penn says Smoke and Shadow takes. So he said January 2057 as well.
I must have misread it. It's entirely possible.
Anyways. So the discussion between Kip and Rion didn't go over well. Yeah. This chapter one is May 2557.
Okay, I guess I just misread it.
But yeah, eventually Rion decides to cooperate because she didn't see any other way out of it. So Agent Han got a little bit and gave the Oni AI Turk a run for its money.
Actually held him prisoner for a little while.
And yeah, they were released unscathed. And she goes back to Norfell to ask for yet another favor, because, you know, dealing with Oni, there's bound to be bugs and other things that probably are they're going to be unaware of. So she actually goes back to Venezia, walks up to the gates to go to or to visit Nor, and the guards there actually find bugs just in on her, like under the skin. So get those removed.
Well, they find them in her in her clothes, in her shoes.
Yep.
All kinds of places.
Mm-hmm.
Under the skin. Then they debug the ship, and you know there's lots of bugs in the ship.
Oh, they kind of debug it, as we'll find later.
Yeah. But while they're at Norfell's office, she gives Rion some reclaimed salvage from the warehouse. And this is where we find out that they lifted the whole warehouse off its foundation.
Yep. So Norv had the foresight to actually see this coming. He managed to grab some of the stuff that Rion had grabbed so she could use it to get something back that they could barter and trade with, because she was going to need fuel for the ship, new nav data, probably some food and rations, supplies. Yeah.
And from, you know, after they go through this and they debug the ship, they look at the information that they glean or that she got with the glove. They decode it and find out that the Torricato is to, after securing the debris field, is to go to another system and secure a planet, not land on it, just make sure nobody else does, for a special team to come and recover items from a distress call that they've been receiving from one Rubicon.
Yep. Extremely dangerous, high-value asset is there, and they even have a Oni comms beacon that's blacking out the distress call.
Distress signal, yes. And so Rion and the crew decide that it'd be a good idea to go there and salvage the ship and then hold it for ransom to get their stuff back.
It's a very bold plan.
It is.
At this point, I think Rion's just kind of like, okay, time to backstab Oni for destroying their lives.
Anyway, they get there and they get a little more than they bargained for.
Yeah, just a little bit.
And they didn't get a little bit. They got a big bit.
They got a big bit. They got a whole Arminger bit.
Turns out that 343 Gilkity Spark managed to crash the Rubicon. I'm sorry, it was only 60% responsible for crashing the Rubicon.
He makes that point very clear. It's so interesting to see like the technicality that Guilty Spark puts in. It's like, well, I did this because I needed to, and I didn't intend to harm my captors, but part of it was their fault. And I only contributed this much because I did this and this, and the humans did the rest of this. So yeah, it's not entirely my fault.
But anyway, the crew goes down there and they salvage a bunch of stuff out of the Rubicon. One of them happens to be a Forerunner armature, a soldier frame. Well, guess who happens to be inhabiting that soldier frame?
Guilty Sparks / Chakas.
Uh-huh. And
/
from the way that...
New entity. New being.
He'd been there for 3 years. Which is rather amazing that it took him that long to find the distress signal, but I guess it is space, so that's not entirely surprising. But, yeah, he'd been there for 3 years, and, you know, as in the second Forerunner book, as you could tell, his mind was quite fractured. He was having trouble putting things in perspective and in the right order.
Right.
So he basically spent these 3 years kind of resequencing his memories, putting, you know, all the Chakas memories in one, in order, put all 343 Guilty Sparks memories in order, and, you know, trying to make sense of everything.
It's interesting, I mean, even with the Forerunner trilogy included, to see that the monitors, they're like intentionally meant to forget their past lives, but it's like either over time or there's some kind of function in there that their old memories are still intact.
Yeah. It's probably, well, with Chakas, you know, he was a composed being. I don't know if all the monitors were composed beings or not.
I thought all of them were.
I don't ever remember seeing anything that stated it one way or another. It could be that they are.
I thought it was heavily implied.
Yeah. Because, what was it? The Arch Monitor. Jeez, I can't think of his designation now.
I can't either. Erkibu's saying that there wasn't anything to indicate that they was composed and that Chakas wasn't planned to be a monitor.
Tragic Solitude. Tragic Solitude was composed. That is confirmed. That was actually in the books. Per the Forerunner trilogy, supposedly Chakas was composed into a monitor frame.
Okay.
Yes, you are right. Tragic Solitude didn't plan to be, he chose to be.
Okay.
Too bad he went Lulu. So.
I mean, Guilty Spark started doing that too, as we saw in the terminals.
Yeah, well, you know, you'd be by yourself
for 100,000 years.
For 100,000 years. See how crazy you go.
Exactly. Yeah. So they recover Guilty Spark, and as Kip is going, I forget if it was Kip and Ram or Kip and Lessa or whoever, they were going out to get more salvage and looking for a data core. Guilty Spark took time to kind of investigate the ship and see what capabilities it had. And I think during that time, it actually found some bugs and disabled some of the bugs while it was in the crate.
No, fully activating. When he was left alone, he actually climbed out of the crate and accessed the ship systems and looked through the ship and, you know, of course, looked at the, you know, personal information and looked into personal quarters and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And while he was doing that, he found some of Oni's bugs and he disabled those as well.
Was that at that point where he kind of figured out Rion's identity, or was that later?
That was a little later.
Okay.
According to later on in the book, it took him a few days to figure out
who she was.
Well, who she was looking for.
Okay. So at this point, we kind of have a little bit of a change in the book. We go back to Earth and a few other characters that we're familiar with from Hunters in the Dark.
Mm-hmm.
Director Richards. And a little mention of Project Bookworm, which is Oni's project for trying to access the domain, as we kind of later find out in the book. But Dr. Richards was in charge of trying to get the portal reactivated in Hunters in the Dark, or what was her role? Okay.
That, and I believe she actually, she was also in charge of the human team that went to the Ark.
Right. She was one of the ones kidnapped.
By the Covenant Shipmaster.
Right. It's like, no, we're going. You can't do this.
No, we're going now.
No, we're doing it. You're welcome to jump out the airlock.
Well, I guess since we're here, we'll just do it.
Right.
But yeah, she's the one that broke her leg while they were walking through the snowstorm and then had to be carried back to the ship.
And yep, Dr. Iqbal was mentioned as well, as Pins points out.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a discussion there about the Born-Stellar relation that was kind of discovered based on Guilty Spark's testimony and the librarian.
And they also uncovered it on one of the Shield Worlds, too, if I remember correctly.
Right, there were some other records that they had kind of confirmed some of Guilty Spark's stuff. But Captain Hollier is actually in charge, or he's captain of a prowler who's going to be charged with going to recover Guilty Spark, or what was Guilty Spark. So there's a brief discussion there between Richards and Hollier about what the situation is and trying to make sure that he understands the gravity of the situation and what to do. Basically, there's whole protocols that they go over on how to approach the system, and if Guilty Spark were to take over the ship, it'd be set to self-destruct, and basically they don't want what happened to the Rubicon to happen to this Prowler again. The Turcado?
No, that's the other ship. I can't think of the name of it. The Turcado is the first ship. That's the one that Han's on.
Yeah, okay.
Well, they're both Oni ships, but
And then there's this discussion between Richards and Dr. Iqbal on whether or not 343's testimony is accurate or how accurate it is regarding the librarian and the domain and all that stuff. And then we flash back. Unless there's anything else you want to touch on there before we flash back.
No, they're basically just, they basically discuss on, you know, how accurate the accounting that 343 Guilty Spark gave them was.
Yeah. And it's basically setting up for later on in the book when there's some more activity on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
So heading back to Jerikos, is that the name?
Yeah.
You want to pick it up?
Where the Rubicon had crashed. Not Kip. What is the kid's name?
Nico.
Nico, yes. Nico and Lessa.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Nico was working in the cargo bay, you know, sorting scrap. And he had the music thumping, just he's working away, and he hears a scrape.
He turns around, and
guess what? Hello.
There's a big metal frame there. That wasn't there before.
Of course.
With big blue glowing eyes. Of course,
he's starting to freak out, and he's like, hi? And of course, Spark responds to him, hello.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he freaks out. And apparently, the rest of the crew was monitoring what was going on in the cargo hold, because the next thing you know, you got Ram and Lessa coming down. I think they were both armed with assault rifles. And then next thing you know, Rion's coming through the airlock with her assault rifle drawn, all pointed at Spark, or 343 Guilty Spark, which this is
the second
the introduction
time
part
that an AI has come aboard their ship.
In the midst of this, the Terracotta shows up to secure the site for Oni, for the specialized team to come recover 343 Guilty Spark. And of course, Spark's already in the system, so he knows that, and he alerts them to it that they need to leave. And of course, them being human, they're slow, so he just decides to take over the ship and launches the ship anyway.
Yep. He doesn't want to be captured, and he's going to do everything he can to make sure it doesn't happen. And Rion is pissed because, yet again, her ship is being held captive by a foreigner AI.
Yeah, she's really happy about it. Yeah, he's right at the moment. Yes.
for the crew of the Ace.
Well, it turns out that, you know, Ace of Spades jumps into slip space, and they find out that they're headed towards a forerunner world called Etrin Harbridge. Anybody that's been paying attention so far might know where that is.
It's all coming full circle or full triangle.
Yeah.
Because the three points seem to be that shield world. Well, I guess there's four points of interest. Earth, Venezia in that area, the shield world, and a few other tidbits along the way.
But Etrin Harbridge turns out to be the shield world that the Spirit of Fire blew up.
Mm-hmm. And everyone else wasn't surprised when they showed up, and it's like, oh, there's debris here. And Spark was like, wait a second, there's supposed to be a shield world here. And Ryan's like, no, it got blown up by the Spirit of Fire. I guess that's when Guilty Spark started making the connections.
Yeah. You know, on the way, they start, I guess they, you know, the rest of the crew kind of starts warming up to 343, you know, being a little bit more trusting. But Rion is she's not. She's still very skeptical of 343.
Yeah.
Anyway, they come out of slipspace. Of course, they're in the debris field, and guess who's there? Geklar.
Gek! And a whole Covenant armada.
Yeah.
Or not Covenant, but...
with his brand new harvester. Drilling a big hole in a piece of rock.
Yeah.
So we have a little chase scene where they have Seraphs chasing the Ace of Spades. They temporarily get away, and of course the Seraphs find them again, and then just as that happens, a UNSC fleet shows up.
Yep.
And they come in ready to go. As soon as they come out of slipspace, they're firing nukes.
Yes, they are.
And a lot of them.
So you got...
One part of that is shortly after the Ace of Spades comes out of slipspace, they actually get hailed by Gek.
Right, who basically just laughs at them.
And is basically just laughing at them. So, of course, Rione being Rione, after she sees the nukes, instead of just concentrating on getting away, she says she has them hail Gek. They answer the call, and she basically, I hope you burn in hell, and then hangs up on him.
Yep. Just rapid conversations.
Like, yes.
Just tit for tat back and forth.
It's like, you know, she flips him the bird and runs.
Except she doesn't run. Chakas makes the ship run again.
Well, actually, she was running at the time, but 343 takes over the ship and jumps them back into slipspace. And Rione, this is funny, Rione turns around and looks at him, and he goes, snail, and just, you know, on down the road.
Back in the slipspace, wee.
And then, you know, this, on this particular jump, they're going to Triniel,
which is used to be a Forerunner world.
Yes, it's a Forerunner. It's a Forerunner builder world,
way off the beaten path.
Uh huh.
It wasn't on any of their nav charts before, right? Something like that.
No, this is an undiscovered world by humanity, at least.
Right.
And along the way, Rione cuts a deal with 343. He helps them get their stuff back from Oni, and then they'll help him find the librarian.
Mm-hmm. And this is where he goes, and I think this is while they're in FTL, but he goes into his whole backstory of who he was, mm-hmm, as Chakas, who he was as Guilty Spark, and...
Yeah, this is where
why the librarian is so important.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also... forget when he brought this up, but talking about the upgrade seed.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was...
This was part of this.
The trade agreements. Like, you, mm-hmm, like, I'll help you do this, and in return, I'll give you an upgrade seed,
mm-hmm,
and help you get your stuff back.
To do my trip, we're going to need to do this to your ship.
Right.
Which Rione was super happy about.
Like, I need to give you these upgrades. I'm like, upgrades? Upgrades. I'll take upgrades. The whole, like, explanation, I know that we're kind of jumping ahead a little bit, but the whole explanation behind, like, what the upgrade does,
mm-hmm,
and this kind of plays into, I think, what Chakas was talking about as far as humanity once rivaled the Forerunners as far as being a spacefaring species.
Oh, yeah.
And that there were some ships that the Forerunners were trying to upgrade, but since it wasn't, like, made out of Forerunner hardlight, they had to have these seeds that would basically add on to existing ships' architecture, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. It would reinforce existing, existing technology. And it wouldn't bring it completely to the Forerunner level, but it would make it a lot more durable than the standard construction.
Right. Hey, Skyrim Halo. It's all right. We're about halfway, I think, through the book, but we'll get to the last half here in a minute. So yeah, so Rione and Spark finally kind of agree to terms, and that's when they get to this builder world, which I think Spark explains on the ground that the Flood were on their way there, so they actually put a toxin into the air so they would all be dead before the Flood showed up.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that.
There was mass suicide on a global scale. 800 million souls. If I remember the number correctly.
Was it just 8,000?
No, 800 million. 800 million.
Sorry. Misheard you. Yeah, it was well, a lot.
They actually listed the entire number, but it was, we'll just go with that. It's a lot of people.
Yeah. So it's a mass grave of a planet, basically.
Yeah. They're flying in, and of course, this planet being abandoned for so long has, you know, it's returned back to its natural state, and then some. You know, the forests are overgrown. Actually makes, 343 actually makes a comment that it looks like that the toxin had a interesting side effect. Because they're seeing these birds that are as big as the ship that act like the butcher birds is what they call them. Is that what he called them?
I don't remember.
they impale their catches on stumps and branches to display to attract mates. Like, oh yeah, that's gotta look great and smell great too. Yeah.
Nature's weird sometimes.
I'm sorry. I'm just picturing this bird picking up an elephant and sticking it to a tree.
That'd be impressive because elephants are not light. They're really heavy.
They're talking about this bird being the size of the Ace of Spades,
right?
And I would imagine the Ace of Spades is not exactly tiny. Being a cargo ship,
not tiny. Yeah, but. Yeah, well, yeah, I guess in the scale of things, you're right.
I mean, yeah, compared to a carrier, yeah, it's tiny, but I'm guessing it's probably bigger than an 18-wheeler.
Anyways.
Anywho.
So they make their way to a builder facility.
One of the cities.
Right, one of the cities, and there's a specific tower. Oh, great, the community update in Twitter form is there, and I just got 9 notifications from you to check that the update's live.
Nice.
In Twitter form. But yeah. Anyways, sorry. Brief intermission there. So yeah, they go to a builder facility to get the upgrade seed. Was that the only thing they were there for?
They also salvaged while they were there. And while 343 was working on the upgrade seed, he did also show them a
med bay or somewhere where they could actually sell.
When they were going down there, this is where they first encountered a translocation pad.
Yeah.
And you can guess how that went. The funny thing is they go through it the first time, and of course everybody's doubled over and about to blow their cookies except for Ram. He's just sitting there like, did something happen?
I love that part. It's like everyone else is like, wanting to vomit, and he's like, "You guys are wimps."
Yeah, like really?
It's a cool little exchange.
Yeah, he shows them a slip splice flake that they will that he's going to use as part of the upgrade to Ace of Spades. Then they go through another translocation pad down to, I would guess, is probably more like a design / construction floor. Probably more of a design space than anything.
Mm-hmm.
And he allows them to wander around and salvage that level. Says it's safe to salvage this level.
Right.
Oh, okay.
So basically, he was saying, this stuff's okay. This stuff should not be touched.
Yeah.
Not like they couldn't come back, but it's basically like they were giving his words like, no, we won't take any of this, but.
This bad. This good. Okay.
Right.
Well, while they were salvaging, they happened to come across a room that had some Forerunner's armor in it.
Right.
The armor was there. The Forerunners were obviously long since gone.
Yes.
And while they were there, they actually found a last letter from one of the forerunners that was in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And about the time they start playing it, 343 shows up and he pushes some buttons and it translates it into English. And that's where it says, you know, that's where you learn about how the flood's coming and how they released the toxin and what they expect it to be like. And he also makes mention of how many souls are on the planet and all this. And it, that really gets to them. They were already kind of sketchy about salvaging this planet because it, you know, it's like salvaging in a graveyard.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what they related it to.
Which isn't too far off of stuff that they have done in the past.
Yeah. But, you know, a lot of times it's one thing to salvage a ship that has crashed, but this is a whole world that basically killed itself to stop a threat. Yeah. Where, you know, a lot of times when they'd find a ship and they would find remains, they would make sure that the families were notified or the proper people were notified and all that.
Yeah.
Of course, after they took their share of salvage. And, you know, salvaging is a hard business, even in our world, because there is salvage out there that you will find human remains.
Yeah. It's not a, what's the term? Glamorous job?
No, it's not.
So.
Anyway, they leave Triniel, and they go to kind of a vacation planet, I guess.
Yeah, like a resort planet. I can't
tell you what it is. A resort planet, and they hide out on the beach for a few days. And this is where they cook up the plan to get their stuff back from Oni. And to the shock of everybody else, Rione actually comes around and starts to trust 343.
Mm-hmm.
Also, during this time, 343 gets his new name, which is Spark.
Yep. Give him a friendly name.
He also gets his own avatar for the ship.
Yeah, Lisa.
For the ship systems.
And Nico work on that for a while. And that way, Spark can have his own little presence there while his armature mm-hmm. form is in another part of the ship.
But they go through the upgrade process. And it turns out the plan is to go back to the world where this particularly rough outlaw world, and for a public meeting place to where they will work a trade with Han, because he'd put out on the salvage net, whatever it is.
Yeah.
That he was looking for.
Basically a bounty.
And this was in response to him letting Rione get away. He got in big trouble for letting her get away.
The only higher-ups were not because, too happy.
Yeah. His bosses weren't happy that he botched this one, because he did. Because, you know, he let them get away with Oni property. And they were really upset with that.
Yeah.
So they cook up a deal to return the salvage. They get their stuff, and you know, all's good. Everybody's even.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, Rione knows better. She figures Oni is going to try to capture him. So she lets. By this point, Geklar has a bounty on her head, a very large bounty.
Before we move on, do we want to touch on the whole interaction with Spark and the Druidical?
Well, we can. There's a couple of points where he does that, but
okay.
While they're on the beach, Spark or 343 has
it's like a comm satellite in orbit. He gains access to.
Yeah, he accesses a comm satellite, and he's accessed the Druidical network created by the three Druidicals that were in charge of investigating the Didact and the Librarian for breaches against the Mantle.
Mm-hmm.
one Dridical was with the Librarian. The other Dridical was with the Didact, the Isodidact. Mm-hmm. And then the third one was, I forget what world he was on. Anyway, he was spared, or it was spared from the Halo's pulse. It actually survived.
Yeah, it's the only one that survived.
But 343 was actually able to access this network that these three Dridicals had set up and was requesting information from this third Dridical. And this Dridical was refusing him access. Basically, he said, you want the information, you go find it yourself.
Yeah, and Eric brought up a good point. It's the same Dridical that the Didact tried to contact and get stuff out. And I think, wasn't it in here where it said something along the lines of, like, I didn't give the Didact access, why would I give you access?
Yeah. Yeah, it says the Didact himself tried to get access, or I wouldn't give the Didact himself access, why would I give it to you?
And that kind of pissed Guilty Spark off, and I think he closed the connection. Yeah. Yeah. So that's one instance, and I think there's another instance when they're back on Earth or something like
that. A little later, there's another instance. But they put this whole plan in. They put this whole plan into motion, and the idea is 343 is basically holding back in a support role so that Oni doesn't see him. The idea is to let slip that Rione and her crew are on the planet, and let Geklar know so he'll come looking for him. And they're using that as a distraction.
Yeah, because it's, I forget what planet it is, but they decide to meet kind of in a square where there are other people around.
Mm-hmm. You know, very public place.
Right.
They do the handoff, and
without incident, just so actually at the start, everything was going to plan.
Almost. Yeah, everything was going to plan until basically they got their stuff back. Rione turns over a data core that they had threaded with just enough
Guilty Sparkishness.
Guilty Spark's code to make them believe that the AI was contained within the data core. And just as they were finishing up, they start to arrest Rione. And as that happens, Lessa and Nico run. Of course, Oni chases them. Also at this time, some Jackal bounty hunters, Geklar's elites, some human bounty hunters all pick up that Rione and her crew are there in the crowd. So, yeah, it's
turned into a firefight.
All hell breaks loose.
To be fair, if anything this book has taught us, it's that Rione is a pretty good strategist.
Mm-hmm.
She comes up with some pretty good plans that actually work.
Mm-hmm. Well, mostly. Sometimes they don't work exactly as planned, but they do work.
I mean, they get off with their without too many scrapes.
Their first plan with Geklar didn't work out so great, but that's more Oni's fault than theirs.
Yeah. Factor they weren't expecting.
The part where Rione's trying to get away from Spartan Novak is funny.
Do tell.
Because, like I said, this 120-pound woman trying to get away from a Spartan. Mm-hmm. She's already got handcuffs on one hand. So, she does manage to slip away, but he managed to snag the cuffs and pull her back. And as he's doing that, she hauls back and hits him in a very sensitive spot.
Because he's not in armor.
Because he's not in armor, and she figures he's not wearing protection in a certain part of the male anatomy. And the way she puts it, she says, I got to give him credit. The way they put this is you saw him stiffen up and you saw a neck muscle twitch. And I'm thinking, he's trying to decide if he's going to snap a leg or if he's going to snap a neck.
I love it.
But she manages to get away from him. Well, not really get away from him. He throws her out of the way of a needle shard, which happens to pierce through one of her shoulders, and lodge into another person and explode. And as he throws her, Spark shows up and catches her and rushes her back to the Ace of Spades. And then they, you know, they jump away and go to hide. With her stuff back, they spend a few days letting her heal.
Mm-hmm.
And then they make the trek back to Earth.
Yep. The next leg of the journey.
And they go to the... Yeah, when they go, they go back to the accession site where the arc or where the portal to the arc is. Mm-hmm. To shoot, what was the name of that mountain? Can't think of the name of that mountain.
Kilimanjaro.
Yeah, basically land on the mountain, and with the upgrades, they basically can make the ship invisible.
It's yeah,
cool.
Yeah,
can I have those upgrades?
One of those little foreigner upgrades that comes with the upgrade seat. Invisibility, faster FTL, the works.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you go to a car wash, you get the works package? Yeah.
Yeah, that's what you got. Well, for Ram, Nico, and Lessa, this is their first trip to Earth. It was the first time they've ever been there. Of course, Rion was born on Earth. And they start climbing down the mountain, and they find a cave in the mountain. They go into the cave. They see some hand paintings from cavemen, and then they get a little further in, and then they start seeing forerunner symbols that are actually carved into the rock.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, this is where Spark tells them that they're going to find the librarian.
Yep.
And they do. They get in there. They do find a forerunner structure, and it's on a center platform. They Spark fires up a light bridge, and everybody starts walking across it except Ram Shalva, because he's a little skittish of the light bridge. Mm-hmm. What happens if it turns off? Well, it won't.
Yeah, Guilty Spark's just like, no, that's fine. And Ram's like, you sure? Are you absolutely sure? Tough military man, scared of heights.
Yeah.
Well, I don't blame him.
Well, no, he wasn't a military man. He was just Salvager.
Right, it was the other guy.
It was the other guy. But anyway, you know, this guy that doesn't have a problem with teleportation pads has a problem with the light bridge. So they cross the light bridge. And the reason Spark needed their help is because he needed somebody to activate the Forerunner equipment.
Right. The whole facility that specific.
Yeah.
Yeah. Meanwhile, the other shard of Guilty Spark.
Well, when they land, they mention that 343 Guilty Spark is kind of looking off into the distance, and he says, and just as they're getting ready to leave, you hear him say, "Ah, there you are." Well, it turns out that back in the chaos of the handoff, 343 kind of left something behind.
Yeah, that little bit of that was enough convincing to say that was Guilty Spark. Was basically a Trojan horse.
What he did is he actually infiltrated the video feed from the Spartan's camera, and the ship AI was unable to clean up the distortion. But once the video feed was in the base's computers, all of a sudden they were able to clean up that particular piece of video that was being corrupted by this little intrusion program Spark had put into the video feed. And this intrusion software was basically looking for the records from the Dredicle that was on Earth when the Halo's fired.
Mm-hmm.
So it basically found that information and sent it back to 343.
Before Richard shut down the facility because she figured out.
And then Richards realized what was going on and shut down the facility, which basically put the whole facility on lockdown. But the fragment was already one step ahead of her and shut everything down.
Mm-hmm.
communications. They actually had a drone that was in the area fall to the ground. You know, a little like supply cart crashed. You know, just kind of explaining what's going on.
And she was quick on her feet. She figured out that Spartan must have been there and went back to the cave where they found the librarians.
Well, actually, they hadn't found that cave just yet.
They found something
while they were while they were outside, while they were locked out of the building. They actually, and this plays into a little bit later into the scene from the inside. They see a shaft of light shooting up from one of the mountains, and what happens inside the mountain, just as they're approaching this platform, 343 decides it's time to tell Rione about her father.
Perfect timing.
Yeah, great timing, dude. And
well, because he thought he was about to leave. He thought he was about to join the librarian.
Well, at first he wasn't going to tell her. And then he decided that he wanted to go in there with a clean conscience, so he decided he was going to tell her. And he tells her what he knows, and of course, Rione freaks out about it because, I mean, you know, she just found out her father was dead.
Yeah, kind of loses
and, it. And, you know, she asked, you know, how long has he known and all this stuff. And just as she's getting ready to activate the next platform, they have this little discussion. Of course, it gets a little physical. Rione pulls her pistol out and holds it to 343's chin. And, you know, he says, the ricochet will most likely kill you and stuff like this. And
yeah, it's like, I'm going to be fine. You might want to reconsider actually shooting that.
She makes the comment that about how 343 doesn't know loss. And that sends him into a rage.
It's like, you have no idea.
You have no idea what I have lost.
It'd be the last of your kind. Lost
everything. Yeah. And just goes on to this really long monologue. And at the end of that, then that's when a fire team shows up, or special ops team and Spartan show up, because the ship AI on one of the ships caught pieces of the transmissions from Guilty Spark's fragment and traced them to the mountain. At least I believe that's what it was.
Could be. I don't remember specifically, but yeah. They found out it was coming from the mountain.
Yeah. But as just before that happens, Rione slaps the controls and turns on the device, and you know, just as it's coming on, that's when Oni starts piling in through the cave. Spark reaches over and turns off the light bridge, and then basically abandons them. He walks into the light.
Yep, he's like, "You're on your own." Psych.
Yeah, and this is reminiscent of one of the comic books where, this is actually, I think, was in Spartan Ops, where they get one of the Janus keys, or half of a Janus key, if I remember correctly.
Yes. When Halsey steps in, yes, it's very akin to that.
Yeah, but Spark goes in, and of course, he stands before the light shaper. When he steps in, his consciousness is actually pulled out of the armature body, and he stands there as
Chakas,
as himself. And the librarian is addressing, very apologetic about everything she's put him through, and he's pleading with her to give him his friends back, and if she can't do that, then to allow him to access the domain so he can see memories of them. And she's basically says, "Well, now that you're here, I'm about to leave for the absolute record. You can stay or you can join me." And through the conversation, 343 realizes that he has friends and that they're right there next to him and they're in trouble and they need his help.
Well, the librarian kind of convinces him of that after kind of like discussing is like, do you really want to do this? Like, this does, like, you won't meet your friends the way that you remember them.
Mm-hmm. He's like, yeah, you know, the three, you know, the librarian is basically saying you have what you need already. And makes him realize the friendship that he's developed with the Ace of Spades crew. He steps, he realizes that the librarian gives him a box. And we'll get back to the box here in a little bit. While this is all happening, of course, Oni is trying to activate the light bridge and trying to get Rion and her crew to surrender. And just as the light bridge, just as Oni gets the light bridge to come back on, there's a bright flash where this column of light that the 343 was standing in gets really bright, and then something launches out of the light up.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's he's left standing on the platform by himself.
Didn't at some point, like, Rion, or I think it was Rion, like, look to where Guilty Spark was, and he saw, like, the Arminger and this other person that wasn't there before, and then, like, the librarian there as well. So, like, they were seeing everything that was going on.
They weren't seeing it clearly. They could see figures.
Right.
As the Oni was coming across the bridge, Spark turns around, and of course, he draws his weapon, which is his arm.
He is an Arminger.
Arminger.
Sorry. Bad joke.
And he fires at the ceiling to get Oni to back off, to get him to back up, and then he deactivates the light bridge. Of course, in doing that, Oni starts to fire back at him, and one of the rounds actually pierces Rion's arm, so she gets shot yet again.
She's having it rough.
Yeah, no kidding. And next thing you know, he gathers everybody on the pad and teleports them to the top of the mountain for them to escape.
Yep, there's always a back door.
And then, you know, of course, the same thing happens. Everybody's about to blow their lunch, and Ram's just standing there like, did something happen?
It's like, yeah, you were afraid of the bridge. Like, don't be making fun of us, and when you had problems with other stuff, and we were just fine, dude.
The one thing with Ram is throughout the whole book, they reference this hand-rolled cigarette that he's been carrying throughout the whole book. He's been trying to quit over a long period of time, and he basically states early in the book that, yeah, I'm down to just sniffing it every once in a while.
Respectable. Okay.
But they get back on the ship. They go into their changing room, locker room, whatever you want to call it. And Ram kicks back and lights up that cigarette. He's like,
"Whoo! Like, I need a break."
Yeah. After that, I need a smoke.
Mm-hmm. And then from here on out, it's pretty much just kind of wrapping up, and Guilty Spark is kind of...
Yeah, it wraps the stories up very neatly, I would say. Mm-hmm. You know, with the Ace of Spades, they wrap up with Guilty Spark becoming part of the crew. They actually had a pseudo-funeral service for Rion's father, for 343's friends, and they drank a toast to friends and family.
Mm-hmm.
Which, and Rion is the one that toasted family.
Yeah.
So, and they, you know, they review, like, you know, what kind of trouble they're going to have now that, you know, Oni's not going to let them get away.
No.
Not, as long as they know that they have Guilty Spark,
but they're also gonna be cover up that cave for a while. We know that much.
Yeah, they also, the bright light at the end of the battle was the librarian's imprint traveling to the Absolute Record. Mm-hmm. Turns out that the box is a key. They don't say to what. They just say a key. So I'm guessing it's probably a Janus key like the other one. That's just a theory I'm thinking.
Next book, hopefully they bring, will tell us more. I hope there's another book.
They finish up the story at the research base with the power coming back on, with the AI coming back up and doing an assessment and figuring out that the fragment of Guilty Spark did no damage. It got what it needed and then it just left.
Right. No. The purpose wasn't to like damage people or kill people. It was just to get information and then get out.
Yeah.
Make it a little difficult along the way.
And then the epilogue is probably almost my favorite part of the entire book. Takes place with Spartan Novak back on Infinity. He just gets out of the shower. He goes back to his quarters and see he has
a message.
Mm-hmm. No postmark of where it came from. No address to who it's from. So he runs it through his security sweep, finds that it's clean, so he reads it. And when he reads it, he reads, "Hey, big guy, just wanted to give you a tip that Geklar is headed to Earth to this refugee camp. Try not to screw it up this time."
I'd forgotten about that until you mentioned it.
Yeah. And big guy is what Rione called him.
Yep.
Because she actually never did know his actual name. So she just referred to him as big guy throughout the whole book. And when they first captured him at the very beginning of the book, she had also said that Geklar was there on the planet and that they should go apprehend him and let them go, you know, trying to work a deal. And of course it didn't work that well for her. And Gek obviously got away.
Yep. Penn said, sadly, he didn't.
Yeah. Sadly, he didn't.
So,
but Gek got his later on.
I'm telling you, man, this set of books, with how it started tying a lot of different pieces in and just seeing how things progressed, this has to be one of my new favorites. And I feel like I've been saying that a lot for some of the more recent books, but with just how everything tied together and like seeing it, different aspects.
Mm-hmm. These two books are ones that I do, are the stories that I enjoy reading more than some of the other ones. I wouldn't put it at the top of the list, but it's up there. You know, if this was on a list that didn't include my favorites, I would definitely listen to these or read these. I'm still hooked on the original trilogy.
I was going to say, I would have to go back and read Fall of Reach, First Strike, and Ghosts of Onyx to see where my feelings kind of intersect with this one, like with this set of books. Mm-hmm. But I guess for the 343 era books, as I'll call them, I think this is probably my favorite. I know I liked.
I have to go with Bad Blood. I have to go with Bad Blood and New Blood as my favorite books so far.
New Blood, I really like.
But like I said, these are up there.
Yeah, the pacing was good. It was easy to keep track of everything in this book.
Mm-hmm.
And just, it's always been one of those things since kind of like after Reach and into Halo 4 that there's been so many loose threads. So it's nice to really see these books pull all these threads together.
Mm-hmm.
That's been, for me, a really big thing to actually see the universe have a little bit of closure in some areas.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they closed out a story that was 5 years old with this set of books. Yeah.
And I hope we see more. I really hope we see more.
I like the direction a lot of the books have taken. a lot of people don't like the Kilo 5 trilogy, and yeah, it doesn't really fit into the typical Halo genre type of book. But I enjoy the Kilo 5 trilogy as a package. Any single book, yeah, I can see where people have a problem. But when you put the whole package together, it's a nice story. I like it. There are things that I don't like about it, but overall, I like the story.
Yeah, I appreciate the story of Kilo 5. I'm not the biggest fan of how it's written, but the information that's in there, I appreciate.
Yeah. Like I said, you know, I like this series better than I like the Kilo 5 trilogy.
Yeah.
You know, is what I'll say. And I do hope there is another book, because I would like to see more from these characters.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like I've gotten invested in these characters, kind of like I got invested in Master Chief.
Yeah. Although I am excited to see where Shadows of Reach comes into play.
Yeah, me too.
But we have a couple other books to read before we get there.
Well, we got a little time before it comes out. Yeah. So
with us wrapping up Halo Renegades, we're going to start our next couple of books in Battleborn and Meridian Divide, because I want to save the Master Chief lineup of books to kind of lead up to Shadows of Reach and Halo Infinite. So we're going to do Halo Battleborn next, and then Meridian Divide. So about the end of May, because of how I'm scheduling guests on the show, probably end of May time is when we'll do Battleborn, and then we'll do Meridian Divide after that, as far as books go. So you have your next reading assignments if you're following along at home. And this means to date, aside from the comics and the collection of short story stuff, I'm only 4 books behind now.
Quiet pens.
From
I know what you're thinking. From
Evolutions, we've done Beyond, Midnight in the Heart of Midlothian, Dirt, Headhunters, and
you too, Eric, you boo.
And no, we're not doing Holiday Eternal yet. I might just say, go watch Installation 00 stuff for Holiday Eternal. Or we could just divide up into chunks like he's doing.
We might have to.
Yeah, just to make sense of it, we might have to. But that's the assignment next is going to be Battleborn and Meridian Divide. So touching on the update real quick, there's not a lot of new stuff in here that we haven't already covered. The only new couple of things that's in here is a couple of events that's happening. Unishek mentioned that the HCS team is working on finalizing plan for online tournaments, so they'll share details here pretty soon. There's 2 events coming up. First one is SWAT Nations Halo 5 2v2 Spring Fling. This one's going to be taking place next week. Sunday, April 26th is when the tourney date is. Signups are open until Thursday, April 23rd, so next week at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. There's a $500 prize pool, with first place taking $250, second place taking $150, and third place taking $100. And that you just go to SWATnation.net and register over there. Doesn't look like there is any cost to enter. And they have the maps and game modes that will be played. And then there is a Europa Halo double series that's actually going on right now that started at the beginning of this month. It goes until May 5th, which is going to be the last game before the grand finals, which is yet to be determined. So that's happening as well. Also, there is a little bit of clarification on the stream, the social streams that are happening. So community play dates are going to be on Tuesday, and then the social streams are going to be Wednesday. So there's kind of different purposes for that. So the social stream stuff, I still think, is where they're going to be handing out the nameplates, whereas the community play dates are just going to be just a fun opportunity for the studio to play with. So I asked Uni what.
No, it does say get your Ice Unicorns reward as well.
Okay, so find a team every Tuesday. So I guess they're replacing that with the social stream for the time being. I guess they're moving the Wednesday streams to Tuesday now, I guess.
That's what it looks like.
Yeah. So that's the short new stuff from the Twitter update. Thanks, Uni, for getting it out last minute for us, at least. At least we don't have to cover it next week. All right. That's going to wrap it up for us tonight. GT, you want to plug anything before we head on out?
Yeah. Find me tomorrow night right here on Twitch, Mixer, and YouTube for Friggin' Fridays. If you'd like to join in, you can message me on Xbox Live at Godzilla Space T. If you're looking for me on social, you can find me on Twitter at Godzilla Todd and the same on Mixer.
Very nice. And I actually was playing through Halo CE with the wife, so we're going to actually start working on getting her back into Halo shape and start playing through the Halo 2 campaign here probably within the next 2 or 3 weeks. And that will be on my personal channel. We're currently looking at Sundays before I do the Achieving Halo stuff. So tentatively, we're looking at like 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock time frame on Sundays for that. So if you want to watch my wife play through Halo 2 for the very first time ever, then I would appreciate the support. Again, that's going to be over on my personal channel, which is Duststorm on Mixer. If I can get it set up to where we can stream on Mixer and Twitch, I'll do that, and Duststorm on Twitch as well. All right, let's go ahead and wrap this up because we are past the 2-hour mark for this podcast now. You can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. We post our content and updates there, so if there's anything that we have changing or whatever, then that's where you can find us. We also stream on Twitch, Mixer, and YouTube at least 3 days of the week. We have our podcast on Thursdays at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Also on Fraggin' Fridays. That starts at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time, and that's hosted by GT. And then on Sundays is our Achieving Halo stream, and that is 10 p.m. Eastern Time. And again, we are currently running through Halo 2, and if there's achievements in Halo 2 that you would like us to help you out with, then please feel free to come on over and join us for that stream.
Oh, that would be Halo Wars 2.
Sorry, what did I say?
Halo 2.
Oh, Halo Wars 2. Sorry. So yes, we will be doing that at least for another couple weeks until I get 100% there. And again, like I mentioned earlier in the podcast, we are going to try to work with the Halo Completionist folks to see when we can get kind of a play date set up to do achievements in some of the other games. You can interact with us on Discord. We have a server there, and I've mentioned that a few times as far as interacting with us, sharing your Halo stories and all that stuff. That's also where you will go to vote for what you want to play during Fraggin' Friday. So if you plan on joining us or would like to join us and want to have some input on what we play, then please head on over to Discord and make your vote. Options are Halo MCC on Xbox, Halo MCC on PC, and Halo 5 on Xbox. We ask that you only vote if you plan on participating in the game night. We also have a Spartan Company and an Xbox Club that you can join as well. You can find the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, Google, and TuneIn, as well as other podcast services. If there's a place where you normally listen to podcasts that you don't find Podtacular, please let us know so we can go and try to get that on the platform that you would like us to be on. You can also support the community in a number of ways. We do have our Patreon, which I know in the current situation of things in the world, that might be a little difficult. But if you would like to go over and check it out, it's podtacular.com/Patreon. You can see what is there that we're offering to our patrons. And then maybe when things are a little bit more stable and people are able to get back to normal lives, you can take another look at it and see if you would like to help Podtacular out in that manner. We also have a Amazon affiliate where if you just shop normally on Amazon, a little bit of that can come back to us. So all you have to do is add stuff to your cart, and then before you check out, head on over to podtacular.com/Amazon, and then that links your order with Podtacular, and we get a tiny chunk of money off of your purchases. You can also donate to us directly instead if you would like to just straight up do that. We have a little PayPal donate thing set up where you can just go to podtacular.com/donate and you can make a one-time donation or a recurring donation if you so choose. So that's, those are ways that you can help Podtacular monetarily, so we can help keep the lights on, help keep our hosting going for the podcast, our website going, and hopefully in the future at some point we can do some other things with it, like giveaways and tournaments and all that kind of stuff we would like to do. You can also check out the Halo Hub. It is a Discord server for community content creators and other people who enjoy content. We pull stuff from there sometimes, and it's run by our former community manager, Haas, and I help out over there as well with the administrative stuff. So please go over there and check it out at thehalohub.com. All right, GT. Well, it's been one heck of a show. It's been an awesome couple of books. I'm happy that we're through it so we can move on and finally get me caught up before Infinite comes out. Any final words to the people before we say goodnight?
We'll see you tomorrow night, hopefully.
Yep. See you tomorrow. Be safe out there. Practice social distancing. And as always, keep on fracking them drugs.